With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're in the second hour of this live broadcast. Thank you for rejoining us. Great commentary from Christian just before, talking about the total free fall of the new British Prime Minister, Liz Truss. I mean, she's literally polling lower than Boris Johnson was at his actual low point there. So not good. So no honeymoon afforded to Prime Minister Karen. Sad, but true. So we'll see how long she lasts. The bookmakers, according to Basil Valentine, the bookmakers are putting out odds that she might be gone by Christmas. She might be gone by Christmas. Is it that bad? It's pretty bad, actually. The economy is in free fall right now in Britain. People are looking for answers, solutions. I'm afraid they're not going to come from government, at least not from this government, and probably not from Labour either. So, hey, the weather report is it's bad, but expect it to get even worse. So anyway, we'll talk possibly more about that in the third hour with F. William Engdahl. But on the line right now is somebody who joined us last week with a fabulous article and a story. His name is Freddie Ponton. He's an independent journalist from France and a top flight researcher who we very much appreciate on this program. He's on the live link right now. Let's patch him in. Freddie, are you there?
Yes, Patrick, good to be here. Thanks for having me on the show again this week.
No, thanks for coming. And I know, Freddie, that you've been watching this Nord Stream story closely, although you haven't really commented on it yet. But you've put your analysis out here. You've rolled out your market stall on Nord Stream, and we've got it up at 21stCenturyWire.com's marketplace of ideas. And the right here at the front of the retail window is Freddie Ponton's latest analysis. And the headline says it all, ladies and gentlemen. Qui bono, if you speak Latin, you know what that means. It means who benefits. Qui bono, from 9/11 to Nord Stream, a new geopolitical game changer. You're making some strong comparisons there to 9/11. Freddie, explain what's happening here.
Yes, of course. Yeah, the title speaks for itself, Patrick. And obviously, we've all looked into the 9/11 extensively. Any investigative journalist or journalist has wanted to always go to the bottom of that story. So looking at the people that benefited from the 9/11, the events that followed the 9/11. So it was interesting to draw some parallel between this sabotage or this act of terrorism for some media, and making and drawing some parallel between the 9/11 and the 9/26. But really, all in all, it's really about looking at the beneficiaries, that had the opportunity, the means, and the reason to profit from the sabotage of Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipeline. So what I really wanted to do, Patrick, is simply not just point the fingers at one camp or another, but really looking at did they actually had the opportunity to do it? Was it technically feasible for them to do it? And who financially or politically benefit from this sabotage? Because I think everybody right now across the board, mainstream media and alternative media, this is one of the rare times where we all agree that this is indeed a sabotage. And it is now time for us journalists to try to figure out what really happened and what does that mean for the world, you know, because we obviously getting closer to the Third World War, and we are very obviously not at ease with that, and we need answers. We need to really understand what's going on, because a lot has happened in September, and it was obviously time for someone like myself and many other journalists to cover it and trying to bring some kind of explanation. And I think and hope this article will provide actually and explore the avenues that we don't hear on mainstream media.
No, definitely. Now, when you're talking about comparing Nord Stream to 9/11, you're very specific here. You know, there's a couple of things that happened with 9/11. We're trying to find the culprits here, or trying to at least get closer to the truth here. You're not making any categorical statements, but you are showing that there are similarities between these two. And I think it's incredibly interesting that both of these feature some kind of a major military drill that kind of shielded the operation. But tell us more about that.
Yes, clearly there is a pattern. I mean, in terms of the 9/11, we all remember the NORAD was conducting a military exercise really during the 9/11 attack. So that's already one thing that we can look at, probably in the UK as well. You know, during the attack on the underground and the bus, again there was some rehearsal and some training taking place at the very same time. And then again, if we look at this this sabotage of the Nord Stream pipeline, we can see that not so long ago there was a huge exercise in the Baltic Sea with the Baltops 22 exercise, involving many NATO partners and allies, with the United States working on some Navy military operations and conducting really some very highly defensive technological experiments in this part of the world. So it all happens really in the backyard of Europe, but also in the backyard of Ukraine and Russia, of course. So questions arises very quickly, you know, as far as to whether there was an opportunity here again for numerous number of countries and allies to get involved and plant something there ahead of the explosion. So all that needed to be a kind of dissected, you know, go back into a chronology of events that occur prior to the news, the breakout of this news, and trying to understand is, you know, not only who benefited, but also who technically and possibly could do that. So I think those that will have the opportunity and take the time to read the article will see that it's very important to understand, you know, that there's different form of benefits. Different form of benefit. You can benefit financially, you can benefit strategically, geopolitically. There's many forms of benefit. And I think that's really what this article is about. Not to, you know, incriminate anybody, but to say, hey, this is what these guys will get out of this if this was to happen, or now it has happened. This is who benefit from that, and that is the reason why they're benefiting from it. And I go really deep into details, looking into Germany, looking into France, looking into Israel, looking into the United States, of course, looking at NATO as a whole, certain countries that could benefit from that as well, and then let the people obviously decide for themselves.
No, absolutely. There's quite a bit of compelling evidence here. And well, firstly, I think it's safe to say, Freddie, that the leading culprit here, the candidate, the perpetrator, the suspect, has to be the United States in terms of it's benefiting the agenda which they've been pushing pretty nonstop now for years. So there's that side of things. But I'm more nuanced on this. I think that Poland is as well. Poland, Norway, basically on the same day, this is suspect, of course, they launched, you've noted this, they launched a new pipeline the day the Nord Stream was reported to be damaged, which is connecting Norway and Poland, which makes Poland the new energy hub for Europe in terms of LNG and natural gas. So, I mean, that's not a coincidence, is it, Freddie?
No, not at all. I mean, obviously, this is the perfect timing, you know, to launch a project when the direct competitor is literally been destroyed. You know, so I mean, it's there is no coincidence in that at all. You know, only you know, ignorant people will believe that this was not planned. So what it says to me, it doesn't matter, you know, who got involved really in Norway and Poland, and if technically or politically speaking, they got involved in that. What matters is the benefit from that. And that's the lesson we need to draw from that. And more importantly, understanding that also this kind of a launch is also can be used as a perfect decoy story, if you will, to bring all attention on Norway and Poland. So again, you know, you got to look at both sides of the aisle and say, on one side, this project was due for delivery around that time. So it's nothing really kind of unusual on that side, but the timing is really spooky. But on the other side, I can see why mass media will use this as a really the main story to say that, well, look, you know, that there is a launch there, and then really driving the opinion towards a possible Norwegian Polish kind of a commanded kind of a sabotage, you know, to fulfill their economic plan, you know. So I don't buy it personally. I mean, everybody has entitled to their own opinion. But as far as I'm concerned, I described that in the article. I believe that this is just a decoy story, and that if you start to look for long enough into the patterns and the deception ways used by the intelligence community, you'll understand that if they're telling you to look north, it is likely that the point of interest is likely in the south, and that's exactly where the article takes us. It takes us actually in the Mediterranean Sea and exploring obviously different avenues and different possibilities.
Well, let's look at that southern front on this story here. This what's shaping up to be one of the great conspiracies of all time. We're going to go down to the southern front and pull that apart and explore that here with our guest Freddie Ponton. Let's take a short break here with TNT Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Hescher is talking about.
The referendums on joining Russia are continuing in the Donbas republics and the Russian-controlled regions of southern Ukraine. On Sunday, the turnout already reached the required 50% threshold in Donetsk and Luhansk republics. Kherson has so far demonstrated lower turnout, with nearly 49% of voters showing up for the referendum. Polls across the two regions and in the Donbas republics are set to stay open for the next couple of days. So there you go. Ukraine about to get smaller, about to get a little bit smaller, it looks like. I'm sure that the mass media cartel will do their best to tell us that evil Putin has annexed these locations and leave out the fact that many of these locations have been under attack for 8 years or so.
Hescher on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Government has taken our rights and will never give them back unless we make them. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. We're in the second hour of this live broadcast here on TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. I'm joined by independent journalist from France, Freddie Ponton. He's on the line right now. And we're doing a deep dive, no pun intended. We're doing a deep dive on the Nord Stream attacks and rightly drawing comparisons to 9/11. In terms of a geopolitical game changer. The question is, Ki Bono, who benefits, but also everyone wants to know who did it. I don't think the answer to that question is as simple as we'd like it to be. More likely, we're talking about multiple parties who have common interests here coming together. Possibly this is an operation with more than one state actor involved. Freddie, you've got some you've got your own ideas and some clues here as to where we might be looking. Let's look at the motivation and the benefit. Israel comes up in this story, and not surprisingly, we haven't heard much about this in the mainstream media, but you've done some research here, which really draws a very, very direct relationship between a competing pipeline idea or project, which has been, it's gotten quite far down the pitch, although it seems to have stalled. But nonetheless, you're talking about a major geopolitical and energy play here in the Mediterranean. Explain to us what's going on here.
Yes, definitely, Patrick. I mean, we've been following this, and many political scientists have looked into that. The economists have looked into that. The EU, the United States, everybody's kind of had a kind of interest in this discovery, the emergence in 2009 of an immense reserves of natural gas off the Israeli coast, with a large potential of some 381 trillion cubic feet of gas, and roughly representing 5% of the world gas reserves. So that's not something that goes unnoticed, as you can imagine. So since 2009, the Israelis have been looking at, and when I say the Israeli, I mean the government. You know, I'm never referred to Israel as the people of Israel. They're like us in France or in the United States. We just see things happening. We don't really not quite understand all the time what's happening. But this is really about government and big money. So just want to make sure that this point is clear with everyone. It's about Israel, it's about big money, and it's fair enough. Israeli discover a large, immense reserves of natural gas off their coast. They want to sell it. They want to sell it, and the natural best client for them in the Mediterranean Sea is Europe. So when you look at that, you're going to see that Israel is going to embark on a journey to build a pipeline, which will be known as the EastMed pipeline. And that pipeline will involve several countries, including Greece and Cyprus and Italy. So the idea was to directly bring from the Levithian gas field, the gas onto the shore of Europe. It's a very ambitious plan, of course, extremely expensive plan, because it's very deep waters in the Mediterranean Sea. So they engage in this project, and very quickly during the Trump era, they really got the support that they were looking for. You know, the United States blessing for this project. They even got the EU to actually invest in the initial survey, what they call the FEED survey, which are the front engineering survey that will basically give the green light for the project or not. So EU spend money on the project, clearly showing that they are interested in buying the gas from Israel. A lot of lobbying, obviously, is going on, because Europe end up picking up the tab as usual. And it goes without saying that if Russia was to not be able at all any longer supply the European Union with this methane gas, then obviously this will put Israel in a very, very, very lucrative positions in the Mediterranean Sea. So that's what the article does. We look into the journey of the EastMed pipeline with the support of the Trump administration. And then obviously the change of tone will come when Biden comes in the equation, because he's really going to go against this project, blaming it on many different issues that are related to Turkey, because Turkey at the very beginning of the EastMed project was basically left out. I think the Israeli thought that perhaps Turkey was not a reliable or maybe a too volatile partner for them to be considered. Maybe that was for other reasons, which also we can consider. But the idea really was only to deal with Greece and Cyprus, and then to create an extension pipeline known as the Poseidon pipeline that will be undertaken by the Italian side at the very southern part of Italy by companies called IGI, Poseidon SA. And then this company was to be the final destination of the EastMed pipeline. Well, the project really died because obviously there was a tremendous amount of political tension created by this project. Turkey was extremely frustrated by not being involved in this project. They started to get and get closer with the Libyan government, so, you know, what's left of it, and trying to really increase the relationship with regard to the transport of oil and oil deal and rig in the Mediterranean Sea. You know, so that created a lot of tension, and I think the Biden administration clearly has used these tensions to say, look, this is not a viable project. Not only is it too expensive, but it creates a lot of chaos in the region. So we're not going to support that. And very quickly, during the Biden administration, we saw them removing themselves and completely basically withdrawing from the project, which left obviously Israel in a bit of a conundrum. So there's many reasons for that. And I'm going to kind of speak my mind and I obviously stand corrected, but this is really how I feel about really what happened. And what happened is definitely with regards to big money, which is regards to Trump having definitely, and probably not himself, but his entourage, having a lot of economic interest in this Israeli deal and this EastMed pipeline. So someone was making money off that, of course, the Israeli, but other people were making money from the United States. And that's the reason why it was pushed that way. When the Biden administration comes, he's obviously in a different position. He hasn't struck his deal yet. He's not in this kind of agreement with Israel as far as getting something out of that, you know. And we all know how Joe Biden likes these nice, sweet deals.
10% for the big guy.
10% from the big guy.
Yes.
And also, don't forget that at that time, he's obviously struck his deal with the Ukrainian, with Kolomoisky, and obviously with this Ukrainian Burma operations, which involved the Russians, because Ukrainian is making money by all the gas and that comes from Russia. So someone is coining, and that is Burma, and definitely Biden and his son's been, and all the other guys, Archer and so on, been involved in that. They all already kind of secured their deal. So for them, there's no real interest to disrupt the flow of money coming in between Russia and Ukraine. But I think eventually what happened is that because Israel cleverly decided to reroute this gas supply by using the terminal in Egypt, allowing themselves basically to use existing pipeline to bring the gas from the Levitian field and bring it to Egypt, and then having this gas basically processed to LNG, and then from that LNG carriers will bring this Israeli gas into the European ports with the help of the United States. So that was the second plight that we saw coming and evolving over the years. And what's really interesting is because Egypt now is involved in this deal, so they are partner with Israel, and we all know the very strong relationship between the Israeli president, Egyptian president, and Joe Biden and the U.S. Administration in general. So I think that's what Biden wanted to do, is to obviously have a sit down with the Egyptian executive branch and making sure they understood that in order for that to seize the day, a deal needed to be struck. And during the research, you will see that you find Biden flying not to Egypt, but actually flying to Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, and meeting directly with the president of Egypt. And I'm quite sure the Israeli was just probably a backstage, you know. And I think this was a trip really to solidify his relationship with Egypt, making them understand that this will only happen if the big guys get his 10%. And that's how I feel about it. But that's really how it looks like, you know. So, and then suddenly everything is moving forward. Biden is literally moving away from all this Burma nonsense. At the very same time, we're talking about June 2021, we have this report from the Hunter Biden laptop that is coming to the Washington Post. And basically, a lot of information about these Ukrainian deals are coming to the equations. The Congress is telling to Biden that he should not support anything in favor of Russia, but you know, Biden is still trying to get and maintain this this deal alive because he's making money, obviously. And this is all well explained in the article. It will really take a long time to set all the key elements and the background for people to understand it. But if you read the article, it's very clear on how Biden is pressurized by the Congress to stop his nonsense in Ukraine. The laptop is out now. A lot of information comes out. Biden needs to find another source of money, of income. And that's why I think this deal with Egypt and Israel makes a lot of sense for him. And suddenly everything moves forward. So going back to the Nord Stream pipeline and them to be completely out of service, crippling basically the gas supply of Europe, at least for a moment. And the Polish and the Norwegians going to provide a little bit, but there is a huge quantity of gas coming from Israel that can basically fit in into the European gas grid, if you will. So Biden is all behind that. We can see that now he's 100%. The communications is clear. The White House communication is clear. So we know that now he's got this deal in place. He's on board, and that's fine. Everything can happen. So that's why I look at the who benefit from that. And I can tell you that this US-Israeli kind of Egyptian deal is shaping up nicely for everyone, and everybody has an interest to get as soon as possible this nice methane gas from Israel, and obviously this LNG to the European ports. So there's a lot of money to be made. And obviously there's going to be, and we will see very soon, some investment in infrastructures as far as obviously increasing the volume of gas being made available to the LNG port of Egypt. Very interesting in terms of geopolitics, energy, understanding really how these three countries are working together to conquer the European gas market.
Yeah, and so yeah, Israel is, you know, they are producing some natural gas from the Leviathan fields. What I thought was interesting about this in your study here, Freddie, is the Jerusalem Post took this position that Russia was somehow behind the Nord Stream 2 attacks, and they go on to say how the, you know, the neoliberal agendas were supposed to wash away protectionism, but it didn't work in the global war on terror. Another trend sabotaged the march towards a liberal rules-based world order. So they're, but they're kind of pushing that conspiracy theory that Russia blew up its own gas pipelines. I found that to be interesting, but also that they're sort of think tank class there are weighing in on geopolitics. And from the Jewish Journal, this article here is kind of revealing in that it's putting out a sort of policy position here that almost says, yeah, we need to basically cancel Europe's dependency on Russian gas and needs to be replaced by other sources, i.e. Israel, among others. But I thought that was interesting because normally Israel doesn't weigh in on those types of bigger geopolitical and European issues. And here they are. Now they're asserting themselves as a player here. So when I saw that in that publication, you've highlighted that here, I find that to be incredibly interesting, especially the commentary on Russia, because Israel's been kind of more or less, you know, they backed off Russia for the most part, although they're locking horns in Syria with, you know, airspace and stuff like this, support, and, you know, Iran as an issue. So this is Israel helping to keep Iran and Russia out of the European energy equation.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Freddie.
You've got it. That's exactly what it is. It's basically The Jewish Journal, the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. You have the ambassador, Dori Gold, you know, that comes and really makes statements about reducing Western dependency on Russian gas. So as you said, rightly so, it's really about now geopolitics and getting involved in the geopolitics and the dynamics that are currently taking place in Europe about the deindustrialization of Europe and obviously the controlled disintegration of its economy using the energy crisis to tear down the very fabrics of the European economy. So they're seeing the great potential. It works on all sides of the deal for Israel, because on one side, as you say, it keeps Russian gas out of Europe. It keeps obviously Iran away from the Arabian pipeline supply, and on the other side, it gives basically full entrance for the Israeli gas to reach basically the European market, which is a huge market, and for a very long time, you know, the supplies that are available from these Levitian fields are massive. So we're talking about for the next 20, 30 years, you know, Israel not being worried about, first of all, for themselves, not having to worry about, you know, gas and therefore energy for the country, which is going to give them a tremendous economic boost. But on the other side, they have now this huge European market open for themselves with the blessing of the United States. They have to do some concessions, obviously, with the LNG process. But that's really, we're looking at the very beginning of this disagreements, and we're going to have to keep our eyes on it to see how that this is going to develop over the years. But open market, it works for Israel. Israel definitely has a massive interest to see this supply of gas from Russia being stopped completely. So that makes them a candidate on our list, if you will.
So the East Med pipeline project, that was the one directly from Leviathan fields from Israel through to Cyprus and then into Europe. So that's pretty much on the back burner now that the U.S. seems to have withdrawn support for it. But is that permanent or is this just temporary? I mean, what do you think? Because an overland pipeline deal, like which was being proposed here from Egypt via Jordan, that has to go through Syria and Lebanon's got to be involved. That makes it incredibly complicated for everybody, especially Israel and the U.S. are going to have some natural problems with this. So is this permanently on hold or is this just temporarily? What do you think? Or is that a dead donkey, the East Med, or is it just on hold?
Well, at the moment in time, with all the messing around and all the stories that have happened during this this East Med project, you know, Turkey first of all being out of the equations, then slightly you could see that the Israeli was starting to give up the Greek as well. So if you look at the route that was proposed, is there's going to be it was an offshore but also an onshore pipeline, you know, so it goes from the Levitan field directly to Italy, passing by Cyprus and Greece. But there was some tension, there was some kind of desire from removing Greece out of the equation as well. So there was a lot of things going on, you know, even with regards to Cyprus as well. So it goes down to the regional tensions, you know, which make this deal very, very difficult and extremely expensive. And as you know, Israel doesn't want to pay for that. They want the U.S. money to come in, the European money to come in, you know, to say, hey, that's for the good of Europe. At the end of the day, I'm not going to be the only one to take the risk from that. So EU sent a very clear message that they were on board of that pipeline. U.S. sent a very strong message with Donald Trump that there were absolutely no problem about going ahead with that. But today, Donald Trump is not in place as the president of the United States, and therefore the rules have to go according to who's going to be in place. And right now, the one that's calling the shot is the Biden and its administration. And they say, no, no, he's made a deal. If it has to go through, it has to go through the LNG port of Damietta and Idku in Egypt, and that's the end of the that's the end of the conversation. So to answer your question, the deal at this moment in time is dead.
Mm-hmm. It's dead. Yeah. So look, we're going to explore the other aspects of this, which is that, you know, how did this act of sabotage actually happen? What sort of tech, what sort of military equipment was used? Freddie has done an analysis on this. There's a few interesting possibilities here. We're going to explore that on the other side. I'm here with independent journalist Freddie Ponton from France. We're talking Nord Stream. We're talking 9/11. We're talking geopolitical game changers. Let's pick up this conversation on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen. This is TNT Today's News Talk.
You won't believe what the major CEO of a food company had to say about the root cause of inflation.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The CEO of Goya Foods, Bob Uyanu, had this to say about the cause of inflation.
When I was a child, my parents said, never take candy from a stranger. And they're giving out candy, incentivizing people not to work. They're taking away our purpose, our spirit, our reason to get up every day. And they're doing it without yes. their own candy. They're taking our candy and using it to incentivize us not to work. That's very inflationary.
Kudos to the Goya CEO for laying out the root cause of this calamity. When they want to collapse our food, energy, transportation, they will then make us more dependent on government. And the more people dependent on government, the more guaranteed votes power-hungry politicians receive. Welcome to the Great Reset in action. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
One kind thing, like giving us the clothes you don't wear anymore,
gets me a wheelchair and my independence back.
One kind thing, like raising money with a bake sale,
gives us comfort, food, and a warm smile after floods destroyed our home.
One kind thing, like challenging yourself to a sponsored cycle,
helps me sleep soundly, knowing my children have clean drinking water.
Choose your one kind thing and help change someone's world. Search British Red Cross today.
Democracy is under attack. Western governments are trying to regulate the internet to shut down free speech. The UK government controls the internet. Disagree with what government is saying and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to ofcom.org.uk. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
All right. We're into the second hour of this live broadcast. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world. We appreciate your listenership. You're listening on the live broadcast, or you're just joining us midstream. Just remember, at TNT, you can always catch us afterwards in the archive. There'll be a playback section for every host, every show, divided by segment, subject, interviewee and expert. All that's going to be provided by TNT. Just go to tntradio.live or download the app from Google Play or Apple Store. You can get us there as well. And it's a great app, and we've got it on our smartphones. Of course, a lot of people use that to stream through to their car stereo if you're driving. So you can listen to TNT on the fly wherever you go. Wherever you are, there's plenty of options there, including iTunes, Spotify, and all of the major podcasting platforms. All of the incredible TNT hosts and shows are available there at your fingertips. Listen at your leisure. Who else provides that sort of 24/7 service, listener-oriented service? Everything at TNT is designed for the listener. That's what makes this such a fantastic network. And we hope that you do enjoy that. And often, right now on the line is independent journalist from France, researcher Freddie Ponton. And we are talking about the Nord Stream geopolitical game changer, Ki Bono. Who benefits? Who did it? We got to ask these questions, Freddie. You know, who had the motive first, who had the opportunity, and who had the means? And by no means will this be necessarily a solo act. not exclusively the work of one party. More likely, multiple state actors are involved in this. And the reason for that, Freddie, and I often try to underline this point, and I think we need to repeat this all the time, is that by spreading the guilt out, it's one way that you can guarantee silence on any operation. Is that if you're robbing a bank, if you get people from different gangs involved, it's going to make sure that everybody's going to keep shtum and mouth shut on the issue, and there's going to be less chance of any leaks. Now, some people say the opposite. Oh, the more people, it's going to be harder to keep the leaks. But everybody is implicated. That's one way of looking at this. That's the what I tend to see, that these are joint operations. We're talking about the U.S. here. We're talking about potentially Poland, potentially Norway partner. Norway is a NATO partner. They're benefiting. There's other people who are involved potentially in this. Israel, but also there's other countries too. I mean, France has come up in your analysis here. Let's talk about the tech. How was this operation done, most likely, Freddie?
Thing because the reality of the ground is what really you use as a base, you know, to start your analysis and trying to understand what was required to take out literally this pipeline, because we're not talking about some small stuff here. You know, these are still pipeline. You know, the wall thickness is about 4.1 centimeters, you know, 1.6 inches. And there's another further 6 to 11 centimeters of steel reinforced concrete that is applied on top of them. So we're talking about a very strong casing here as well. Now, the pipe weight around 11 tons per section, which increased basically with the overall weight of 24 up to 25 tons when the concrete is added. So it's not just a little explosion that's going to do the trick. You need at least, according to the experts, which have had a chance to read and evaluate, an approximate 100 kg kilo of TNT, if not more, to actually explode and to create such explosion, which gonna actually justify what the Swedish seismologist from the Lund University in Uppsala University as well find out, you know, so we can compare, you know, how strong the explosion was, and from that you can deduct as well what kind of explosive ordnance that will be required to justify such explosion. So this is the first thing that you need to start with. And then from that, you look at the technology that is currently available on the market. And when I talk about the market, I'm talking about the underwater drone market, what they call the unmanned underwater vehicle or autonomous underwater vehicle. So this is a technology that has been developed over the years, and they got better at it. And clearly, in that game, they got a few companies in the world that kind of really make themselves the leaders in this maritime defense technology. And the French Naval Group, for instance, is definitely put himself really at the forefront of this technology. And they are very specialized in Europe, underwater explosions. So they're known for that. They've developed a number of unnamed underwater vehicles studied by the Naval Group D-19, which was very successful. And obviously, I'm not going to go too technical today, but in the article, I put some video and also some information that will allow you to understand what these guys are doing and how their technology allows them to become a candidate for this explosion. Doesn't mean they did it. Again, what it means is that technically they had the ability to undertake a stealth operation of that magnitude. So in the article, I present also their latest UUV there. They call it the Oceanic Underwater Drone Demonstrator. Huge machine that can be launched from the shore from a ship, from a submarine that can carry a lot of payloads, that can deliver ordnance, mine, specialize in mine laying, mine detection. So they really have full capacities. In terms of communications, I mean, this is really the creme de la creme as far as, you know, sonar technology and all the Wi-Fi technology to be able to conduct this kind of mission, you know, with full image capacities, real-time data gathering, and so on. So they even use artificial intelligence to enhance the capacity of these underwater drones. So, I mean, we're talking about the latest technology, and I have to say the Naval Group is really on top of their game at this moment in time. So I show their capacity to undertake this stealth operation. Doesn't mean they did it. And then the other one, which I'm looking into as well, is their counterpart of the U.S. Navy, which also have been working really hard, obviously, to get a slice of that market. And they put out a very impressive underwater vehicle known as the Snakehead LDUUV. And what's very also important is to understand, were they operational at this time, you know, in September 26th, were these operational, or were they even operational in June 2022 during the BALTOPS 22 military operation in the Baltic Sea? And that's how I qualify them. First, they needed to have the right technology, and number two, they needed to be operational. The technology needed to be operational during the BALTOPS 22, and the Snakehead was. So very interesting. Put a lot of information on that. The U.S. Navy developed the Orca XLUUV, which is currently a little bit 64% off budget. So it's a very expensive project and is 3 years late in its delivery. So clearly this UUV could not have been used for this operation. And then I'm looking at, you know, more into the NATO apparatus, you know, as who in the NATO operation really is involved with UUV. And very quickly, we could see that the exercise, the BALTOP 22 exercise, was led by the U.S. Naval Forces Europe, Africa, and executed by the Naval Striking and Support Force of NATO, that is known as Strike for NATO. And that was done under the leadership of the U.S. Sixth Fleet Task Force, known as the CTF-68. These guys are permanently assigned to the NAVAF, which is headquartered in Naples, Italy. This is basically the complete center of operation for Navy missions. And definitely they were very, very active during the BALTOPS 22 in the Baltics. So again, looking into that, I think it was important to see the U.S. Navy, how they articulated the exercise, who got involved, looking at the German, the French Navy was there, the Norway Navy, the Danish Navy. I mean, everybody was there. So everybody had a go at it, but not everybody had the right drone, underwater drone, to complete that mission. So that's also what we're going through. I've also indicated some aspect of air support. It's very important to have the air support, and obviously the amphibious assault ship U.S. Kearsarge, which was days ago in the Baltic Sea before the explosion. So we know again that after and before, just before the explosion, there was some reconnaissance, there was some kind of a scouting missions looking at, you know, if everything was the way it should be. And these guys were just not as far as 50 kilometers from the Nord Stream 1 gas pipeline, and also the very close to the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. So all that is well documented in the article. And then that's the first part of it. And then the last part of it, which I thought technically was very interesting, is this kind of a deal in between Huntington Ingalls Industry and the Norwegian Kongsberg Maritimes with their company Hydrid Inc. I think they are based in Florida. They developed a while ago a very, very successful underwater unmanned underwater vehicle known as the Remus 100, you know. It's funny, when I read the Remus 100, I thought, like, it reminds me the Red October, you know, with Marco Remus, you know, the the sub-commanders of the Red October in the Sean Connery movie. So that was a very interesting little anecdote. But anyway, what matters here is that the Remus 100 was delivered to the German Navy. And that's found that extremely interesting because they were tested, and we know that this kind of material was also used for testing purposes during the not only the Baltop 22, but Baltop 2018 and so on. So they've been really working and training with this equipment for a very long time. And we know that the new Remus 600 came out, which is a massive UUV, and we don't know, it's not quite clear whether the German acquired that technology, but this entire technology from the Remus 100 can be basically transferred to the Remus 600. So very interesting to see that technically also the German had the ability and the opportunity to conduct a stealth operation in the Baltic Sea.
No, they did. So, I mean, we can't, as you said, we can't rule out Germany from this as well. And, you know, this would be a covert operation with the highest level of classification. Obviously, the blowback on Germany would just be, you know, huge, basically, if they got caught involved in anything like this, you know, especially if people in Germany are protesting just before this about shutting down Nord Stream pipelines, and people are just, you know, being pushed into fuel poverty in Germany as well. So, I mean, huge potential blowback if Germany was to be seen to be involved in any aspect of this. So I think that's a good one to point out there. So just moving on, we just got a couple of minutes left. Freddie, excellent report here, which is at 21stCenturyWire.com. by Freddie Ponton, and the headline is as follows: Key Bono from 9/11 to Nord Stream, a new geopolitical game changer. I think there's no doubt that that's what we're looking at here. This is a geopolitical game changer, and my biggest fear, Freddie, is that there's going to be no definitive discovery or narrative as to who is responsible, and this could open the door for another pipeline sabotage. And you know, you got the Turk Stream pipeline under the Black Sea coming from Russia, which goes into Europe as well. That's now going to be a legitimate target from a Western point of view if they get away with, or whoever did it, if they get away with the Nord Stream operation, they could do it again. And then there could be a tit for tat. Somebody could attack if there's a Mediterranean pipeline that comes online, or the overland, or the LNG, whatever, in Egypt. Basically, this is hugely dangerous, isn't it? This new era, somebody has basically upped the ante, haven't they, Freddie? Couple of minutes left.
Yeah.
2 minutes left. Your final thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Just finishing on the German section, and I'll move to my conclusion. I think for the Germany, really invite people to look further into Robert Habeck, you know, the vice chancellor and minister for the economy and climate protection in Germany, because someone extremely ambitious is obviously part of the Greens. The Greens obviously have a lot of power in this new German government, and someone extremely ambitious. And funny enough, his entire family root back to Denmark, so he's fluent Danish speaker. His four kids have been studying in Denmark, and his connection with Denmark is very well established and well known. And then the second person, which for me is my favorite, is Annalena Baerbock. And she's the foreign minister of Germany. She's literally a pal of Antony Blinken. So she lived in the United States. She's fluent English, and she's a very, very green person. So these both have want to obviously put their mark and increase their power into the policy agenda of Germany. And certainly they would have a huge interest for that as well. So I'm not saying they are culprits or guilty, but what I'm saying is definitely a huge benefit for their political and ideological view. So that's the one side of it. And then What I can say to you is at this moment in time, there's going to be an investigation. Obviously, we can't trust the U.S. investigation. That will be silly. What we look at it is a Russian-German infrastructure. So, of course, the investigation, a foreign investigation from Russia, and the result of it is to be anticipated, and we're looking forward to that. And I will finish this little conversation with a news that came out about an hour and a half ago from Gazprom, which announced that they are actually basically working on decreasing the pressure in string B of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. And the purpose of that is to pump natural gas out of the pipe. And that will make it possible to safely inspect string B for integrity, as well as to reduce potential environmental risk in the event of a possible gas leak. So what it's telling you is basically that the Russians are looking at saving this pipeline, and definitely a huge possibility for at least the Nord Stream 2.